welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, March 31st, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Georgia Kelly sits down with Franz Hartman from the Alliance for a Livable Ontario. The two discuss the Alliance's goals for holding the Ontario government accountable and creating vibrant communities across the province. Franz Hartman is the coordinator of the Alliance for a Livable Ontario. Before this role, Hartman was the executive director of the Toronto Environmental Alliance, or TEA, for 11 years. He also served as the chair for the Ontario Greenbelt Alliance for 4 years and helped the Alliance build vast community support for the Greenbelt. Prior to working at TEA, Hartman was the environmental advisor to Jack Layton when he was a city councillor and oversaw Layton's civil society engagement activities in Ottawa. Georgia Kelly is a third-year undergraduate in the University of Toronto's Ethics, Society, and Law program. She works as an associate editor for the student newspaper, The Varsity, and is working towards a career as a journalist. She primarily reports on labor issues on campus and local business issues around the city of Toronto. Here are Kelly and Hartman in conversation. Take a listen.
All right. Thanks, Franz. And thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for inviting me.
If you want to just get started by telling me a little bit about the Alliance for a Livable Ontario and how that got started.
Sure. Well, what we are, we're in an alliance of people and groups representing literally hundreds of thousands of Ontarians from a whole bunch of different sectors. Our goal is to build a livable Ontario and stop the provincial policies that are right now falsely claiming that they're going to solve housing problems, the many housing problems facing us. But unfortunately, these very policies are harming our communities and undermining the protection of our farmland, natural areas, and democratic institutions. How we started was back in the fall, a number of us got together and said, you know, what the province is proposing is not going to help any of us. And interestingly, in a very short period of time, we had farmers, we had environmentalists, urban planners, business people, housing advocates, community groups, academics, all coming together under a big tent saying, yeah, let's do something to stop these bad policies and ensure we are pushing an agenda that actually builds a livable Ontario.
And those policies are the ones that are planning to develop on the Green Belt, right?
Amongst other things, that's probably the most high-profile policy. The province passed Bill 23, which fundamentally changed the way in which we do planning in Ontario. And there are a lot of really, really bad things in that bill. There are a couple of good things, to acknowledge that not everything is terrible. They also, another policy was Bill 39, which gave very undemocratic powers to the mayor of Toronto and also legalized pulling out land from the Greenbelt. And then there's a whole bunch of other policies, so-called regulations that have been passed, but it's been a number of them, not just one.
Mm-hmm, I see. Maybe you could speak a little bit to when you say a livable Ontario. What does that mean?
Well, if you go to our website, livableontario.ca, you see 5 points, and I'll just walk through them quickly. What we're calling, we aim to build a better future where, number one, we welcome a growing population accommodated through a combination of government, private sector, not-for-profit, cooperative, and charitable partners that build truly affordable housing, mixed housing situated within communities that offer a variety of transportation services. And to underscore, by affordable, we're talking about housing that people on low income can afford. The second is we want communities that are vibrant, healthy, and affordable, climate resilient, and surrounded by permanently protected farmland and natural areas. We need those permanently protected farmland and natural areas because the climate crisis is going to make those more and more precious. But we also want communities that are vibrant and healthy. The third part is we want provincial and municipal governments that are actually real partners and make planning, infrastructure, and housing decisions that build sustainable and healthy communities. Right now, the province and municipalities, more often than not, are in disagreement about how to proceed. Increasingly, it's the province just telling municipalities, this is what you have to do, regardless of whether or not the municipality and the elected officials want to do that. The fourth point is we want all political parties to reflect our agenda in their party platforms in the 2026 provincial election. And fifth, we want all political parties to uphold democratic principles as well as practice public consultation, engagement, and transparency.
I want to ask you more about this question of housing. We know that the Ford government is planning to build houses on the land that was previously protected under Greenbelt legislation. Why is this not a good thing? Why is this not a solution to the housing crisis, the affordable housing crisis?
Well, for starters, it's important to acknowledge there are large housing problems facing a whole bunch of different people. The most obvious and I would say the most serious ones are the lack of truly affordable housing for low-income people. So there are housing issues that need to be dealt with. The best way to deal with those issues is to first of all figure out, okay, what's actually stopping those houses, those homes being put on the market? And for years, the provincial government and certain parts of the development industry have been telling us, oh, the problem is because there's not enough land available to build the housing we need. So we need more land that's designated for construction. And if we do that, we solve the housing problems that are facing a variety of different people. Well, that diagnosis is actually completely wrong. There have been two reports that have come out since end of February and early March that show, that in fact, there's more than enough land available. The housing problems people are facing have nothing to do with lack of land. And that raises the question, why is the province taking land that has been protected by the Greenbelt out of the Greenbelt? It has nothing to do with solving the housing crisis. Absolutely nothing. It's not necessary. In fact, that land is far away, in most instances, is pretty far away from existing towns and cities. And to build there would be extremely expensive and likely it would lead to unaffordable new homes. So it makes no sense.
So I want to pivot a little bit to this sort of coalition that you hinted at the beginning of various groups and stakeholders that are sort of included within this alliance. You mentioned farmers, for instance. How did this relationship begin?
There's been a lot of connections between farmers and people who care about natural areas in the Greenbelt over the last 10 plus years. And that is based on the reality that farmers know how important it is to preserve natural areas and farmland. They want to preserve farmland. And increasingly, National Farmers Union Ontario Branch, the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, they understand that a green belt is actually really good because it helps protect farmland from land speculation and from unnecessary development. So for many years, there's been connections. Farmers understand, protecting the green belt helps farmers, and environmentalists realize that farmers are an important ally for natural areas. Farmers also understand the importance of maintaining natural areas around their farmland because the Greenbelt natural areas provide huge ecological services that help farmers. So that relationship existed for quite some time. And more recently, and I would say in the last 5 or 6 months, those relationships have been kind of expanded to include people in the kind of housing advocacy community, affordable housing advocacy community, and urban planners. Because farmers know that the pressure that's on their farmland, the pressure to turn the farmland into housing and homes, comes from developers and land speculators, and it's all tied in with what we do in our cities, how we deal with housing. And I think there's an emerging understanding that if we plan our towns and cities properly, if we build the right sort of housing in the right places, the pressure that's on farmers to develop their land will be reduced, if not eliminated. Similarly, I think that housing advocates have realized, wow, a new ally for us are farmers, because what helps them helps us and vice versa. They can help push housing being built in existing towns and cities and affordable housing, and that's going to reduce the pressure on the farmers. So there's a wonderful connection there, which is just, you know, each knows that working together will strengthen their ability to get what they want. But I think there's also just an overall understanding that we have a climate crisis, we have a whole bunch of affordability issues, and this is a great opportunity to come together under one tent to focus on a very specific agenda. And that agenda is creating a lot of new relationships and trust.
So what is it like to be in the meeting room planning group with such a sort of unusual or unexpected group of interested parties?
Surprisingly easy, because we are there because we agreed to a very specific agenda. And as we've agreed to keep our differences outside and just to focus on what we agree on. And that has led to a lot of wisdom. It's led to a lot of people learning, you know, to walk in the shoes of another person who is in a very different context. And that's only good. That being said, we're still in early days. You know, the Alliance has really only been around for a couple of months, maybe 3 months. We kind of dreamed of it about 4 months ago. We had our first inaugural meeting in late January. But the various leaders that are sitting around the table, they understand politics, they understand community activism. And so there's a lot of kind of shared knowledge, and there's also a lot of respect, and there's an understanding that we are stronger working together on our shared agenda than we are focusing on our differences. So it's easy. That being said, we haven't had any situations yet where potential differences could emerge. And I'm hoping that when that happens, because it invariably does, we will have built trust. So that people can, you know, listen to each other and arrive at decisions that are best for the Alliance.
And just to clarify, that specific agenda, does that follow the 5 points on the Alliance's website?
Exactly. That's what we're focusing on. And it has meant that on a number of occasions, people who have joined the Alliance have sent emails to us saying, you know, we'd like issue X to be taken up by the Alliance. And if issue X doesn't fit within those 5 points, I sadly have to say, sorry, we can't. One of the challenges is that when a kind of a new entity, and the Alliance is really just it's a network, right? It's not an incorporated not-for-profit or anything. It's people and organizations willingly coming together and working together. When somebody wants to bring something inside the tent that isn't part of those 5 points, we have to say no at this point. Now, a year or two from now, things may change, but at this point, we have a very, very specific agenda.
And what sort of deliverables does like the Alliance produce, or has it sort of been working on so far?
A great question. So we very deliberately decided at the outset that the Alliance is a network. It's a space where groups and people can get together to discuss long-term actions. We're not replacing anyone. We're not taking over other organizations or alliances or networks. We're a space where groups can get together and do things that they could not do individually. So one of those things is think in the long term. Most advocacy groups are focusing on campaigns or actions that are, you know, short term, you know, month two, three, four down the road. And as I like describing it, most of the groups that are focusing on what's happening around housing and the Greenbelt, they're in firefighting mode. You know, the province has lit a bunch of fires and they're out there figuring out how do we put out the fire. That's important to have happen. But we also need a space where people can say, okay, we got to think about the future. We can't just be reacting. We have to be proactive. We have to have a plan between now and 2026. How are we going to get all the political parties to adopt our agenda? And that's what we offer. So our most important deliverable is a space for groups to come together and to coordinate and plan. The second thing that we offer is there are times we're kind of like a clearinghouse. people talk about, okay, I'm working on this issue, or I'm doing that action, etc. This helps us communicate that information and those tools, those events to a significantly larger group than otherwise exists. So, you know, people increasingly are coming to us to find out what's going on. And the coordinating committee, which kind of oversees things, that's a space where we're, you know, sharing information all the time. So that everybody's aware of what's going on. So that's another deliverable. And the third deliverable is we actually will be creating tools and reports that the coordinating committee thinks are best to come from the Alliance, right? So at end of February, we released a report by Kevin Eby that I spoke about earlier about there being 2 million housing units available. That's something that we decided that it was best for the Alliance to commission as opposed to an individual group that's part of the Alliance. So third deliverable, tools and resources and reports that our members will use.
Just circling back to like these sort of firefighting operations you mentioned, can you sort of walk me through what those look like?
In November and December and even in January, there was a huge amount of action going on around the Greenbelt. For example, there were weekly protests in front of MPP's offices across the Greater Golden Horseshoe. There were meetings taking place. There were various community organizations bought community ads or bought ad space on radios and ran ads about the Greenbelt. Keep your hands off the Greenbelt. Posters and signs went up all over the place. The Alliance for Livable Ontario, we created a 7-page report that went to the province that was signed by, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different organizations and individuals. There was a big rally at Queen's Park. It's in the second half of February. There was a lot of stuff going on, and there still is a lot of stuff going on. It's not as fast and furious as it was before the new year, but people are still very upset and are still organizing and mobilizing.
I wanted to dedicate this last few minutes to just talking a little bit about where the Alliance is now and maybe what your goals are, what you hope to achieve maybe in the next few months or years.
Well, I think in the next few months, our primary goal is to give Ontarians hope that, in fact, there are lots of very doable ways of building a livable Ontario. There are doable actions that can be taken to build housing that is deeply affordable, that also meets the needs of people of various income levels, and that can be done by building them in existing towns and cities. I think there's a lot of despair amongst people, and they just go, oh, we have no choice but to do this. So a key goal for the Alliance is to use our members, provide them with the tools they need to get that message out. There is hope. You know, we can do this. We can absolutely do it. And the good news is, in the process of building affordable mixed-use homes in existing towns and cities, we're actually helping solve a whole bunch of other issues. We can do this in a way that will help create more climate resilience. We can do this in a way that helps solve a whole bunch of social equity issues that are out there. Because how we design the places we live in and our neighborhoods has a big impact on our climate resilience and social equity. So we're kind of renovating, let's do it properly. And so we're providing hope by saying, here's the alternative vision. And I think that is, at this point, really, really important. The other hopeful outcome over the next few months is we just want to continue building relationships between these unusual sectors that haven't had a lot of history working together. And you build relationships by connecting, by doing stuff together, by holding events, etc. So that's what we're going to be doing. And for your listeners who are interested in this, you know, the livableontario.ca website, we're launching a new one. We have a one-page, very simple one that will be launched hopefully in the next few weeks, and that will have lots of resources on it. So stay tuned. Lots of interesting stuff will be happening.
Thanks so much, Rods, for speaking with me today. It was great to hear about the Alliance.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Rob. Rabble Radio volunteer Georgia Kelly and Franz Hartman, the coordinator of the Alliance for a Livable Ontario, in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Georgia and Franz. For more information about the work the Alliance for a Livable Ontario does, please visit their website at livableontario.ca. If you'd like to become a part of Rabble Radio's interview team, please get in touch with us at editor@rabble.ca. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, we'll hand it over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week, the Liberal government unveiled their federal budget for 2023. Rabble's parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg reported that the budget saw progressive gains in some areas and setbacks in others. One progressive gain includes the Liberals' promise to expand the National Dental Care Coverage Program to uninsured Canadians with annual incomes of less than $90,000 a year. The government is also providing Canadians with a one-time so-called grocery rebate, which will see families with two children receive $467 this year, with single Canadians receiving $234, with the money being dispersed through the existing federal GST rebate program. While some are happy about this choice, others are calling it a band-aid solution. One thing which is concerning about the 2023 federal budget is the proposed $15 billion worth of cuts to federal departments and programs. Chris Aylward, president of the Public Service Alliance of Canada, said that these cuts could mean a reduction in social services as well as a loss of jobs for public service employees. Also in national politics, Doreen Nicholl reports that the NDP is the only federal party opposing sweeping changes to the lobbyist code of conduct. Currently, the Code of Conduct for Lobbyists requires them to wait 4 years to lobby any politician they have previously campaigned for. The proposed changes being offered by Canada's Commissioner for Lobbyists, Nancy Bélanger, would reduce this wait time to zero. The gutting of these rules would allow politicians to be more easily influenced by lobbyists, especially if those lobbyists helped those same politicians fundraise during their election campaigns. Democracy Watch's Duff Conacher warns that this is nothing more than legalized bribery. Conacher warned, quote, "The changes will gut key ethical lobbying rules in ways that essentially try to legalize bribery by allowing for favor trading between lobbyists and politicians that will corrupt the federal policymaking process," end quote. To listen to a full interview with Conacher and Nicholl, cue up Rabble Radio's March 3rd episode, Democracy Watch wants to hold dishonest politicians accountable, right after this episode. Also in national news, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced the closure of the Roxham Road border checkpoint during a press conference with U.S. President Joe Biden last Friday. Roxham Road had become a focal point for refugees traveling through the United States to Canada to seek asylum. Many of these refugees traveled through the U.S. from Central America, South America, and Caribbean countries. Roxham Road was a viable point of entry for these refugees because it was categorized as an irregular border crossing and therefore not subject to the Safe Third Country Agreement between the U.S. and Canada. The Safe Third Country Agreement requires refugees to claim asylum in the first safe country in which they arrive. The constitutionality of the Safe Third Country Agreement is currently the subject of a charter rights challenge before Canada's Supreme Court. It is being argued that the U.S. is not a safe third country due to the possibility of refugees facing violence and indefinite detention by U.S. authorities. As a part of a new agreement between the U.S. and Canada, the Safe Third Country Agreement is now being applied to all points of crossing along the shared border. In Indigenous news, national politics reporter Stephen Wenzel reports, the Raven Trust has launched a new toolkit to teach about Indigenous rights. Broken up into 10 30-minute videos, the series teaches about the fundamental treaty rights, the legacy of the Indian Act, constitutional rights and environmental rights, and Indigenous stewardship. Presented in a lighthearted way, the series helps open up difficult conversations about the legacy of colonialism and white supremacy. To learn more, visit raventrust.com. And finally, in health news, the Federal Green Party is supporting calls to reduce restrictions on the medical use of psilocybin, commonly known as magic mushrooms. Psilocybin has been used to support those living with a terminal illness or to treat those experiencing severe mental illness. Green Party co-leader Elizabeth May called on the federal government to increase medical trials on psilocybin and ultimately ease access to the drug. May said, quote, "To say that someone is incurable while refusing to look at a cure strikes me as beyond lacking in empathy," end quote. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. The last thing I'll leave you with, listeners, is this. If you haven't been a part of the community that keeps Rabble thriving yet, please consider donating today. Becoming a monthly donor or gifting Rabble with a one-time donation will help Rabble keep delivering quality independent journalism 365 days a year. Rabble has never had a paywall or charged a subscription fee, and the generous support of our readers ensures that Rabble's progressive news and views remain corporate-free and accessible to all. And that's what media democracy's made of. It's easy to support Rabble.ca. Simply visit rabble.ca/donate and share the love. And hey, did we mention it's our birthday next month? We're proudly celebrating 22 years of sharing high-quality, progressive journalism, which is corporate-free and accessible to all. There's no better time to support Rabble. Become a rabble-rouser. Visit rabble.ca/donate today. Once more, that's rabble.ca/donate. That's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Do you want to share Rabble Radio on your campus, college, or community radio station? It's easy. To find out more information about how your local radio station can become a host for Rabble Radio, please email us at editor@rabble.ca. Do you have a guest you want to hear on our show? Is there a topic you've been wanting to cover? Do you yourself have a story to tell us? Let's talk about it. If you have feedback for our show, ideas, questions, or would like to become involved with Rabble Radio, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at editor@rabble.ca anytime to get in touch. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Radio Rewind.